I'll pay you the respect of speaking frankly about some of the issues that we're facing right now in this pension campaign, because I think it would be a misuse of time for me to summarize the details of the campaign for you. I know all the people around this room are quite knowledgeable about pensions. I won't rehearse this step by step, but I think it would be a bit more interesting and useful, although if it gets raised in questions, I'd be happy to get into campaign details. It's just getting into a little bit about what I saw in Whitehorse, going a little bit over some of the obstacles that we perceive ourselves as facing right now in this pension campaign. And then lastly, really thinking about between now and May, when all the finance ministers after the Whitehorse meeting are set to meet again, what are some of the things we can do between now and May as a movement inside CUPE, but across the entire labor movement? And then what is our general plan for after? You know, how can we avoid doing what our friends and opponents on Parliament Hill are sometimes accused of doing, thinking in sound bites, thinking in weeks at a time, as opposed to really some long-range planning about how we really take on this pension debate? Because my understanding of what you're hearing from CUPE members, and I'm a CUPE member myself, that's my union, that's where I come from, is that we're being asked more and more to play a bigger role in educating our members and in speaking forcefully and providing policy solutions, not just being reactive, but being proactive. So I want to talk a little bit about not just May, the next time the finance ministers all get together, but what we're thinking about in a longer term sense. Okay, so let me start with Whitehorse. It was an education to be there, and it told me my experience in the week that I was there with our Secretary of Treasury, Hassan Youssef. It really told me a lot about where we are with this campaign, because we had originally perceived as having a very visible public rally protest presence in Whitehorse at first, and we quickly realized that wasn't going to actually suit the needs we had at the time, because believe it or not, given all the work that has been done at a local level, we're getting an audience with a number of finance ministers from provinces you may not expect would be interested in hearing what we have to say. So if we were to go there and as good trade unionists do very well, throw our gauntlet down and call a whole bunch of people a whole bunch of names, which I'm all for in the right circumstance, don't get me wrong. Our belief going into that meeting was that we weren't going to actually push the ball further with that kind of strategy as we could, being equally forceful, but really testing to see where some of our friends at the provincial level, NDP-governed provinces, were at, but where other provinces were at in listening to the three proposals we put on the table. I'll summarize them briefly. We're proposing on a go-forward basis, doubling benefits for the Canada Pension Plan. Another 3% of salary each side, integrated over 7 years. This was done in the 1990s, and barely anybody noticed it because the increase was so gradual. And for our workplace pension plans, because they're integrated with CPP benefits, there's no net contribution increase for our members. Some of our opponents will tell you otherwise. Don't believe them. I'll get into that. The second thing we're proposing is increasing low-income public pension benefits for seniors that qualify for something called the Guaranteed Income Supplement by $100 a month, about 15%. And then the last thing we're calling for is a federal system of pension insurance that works much like the Canada Deposit Insurance Corporation works for your bank account, where your bank account is insured up to $100,000 a year. Our federal pension insurance system, created by the federal government, where provinces could opt in, would do the same thing for workplace pensions. There are 13 other countries in the world that do this. Our big, bad right-wing neighbors to the United States, maybe we haven't been thinking of them as so right-wing lately under the leadership they currently have, they have a pension insurance system that backstops pensions in that country to $55,000 a year, U.S. And there are problems with the insurance system down there, I'll acknowledge, but that exists in that woefully more right-wing country than ours. So it's useful to get that perspective. So we've been pushing these three ideas. And in the run-up to the Whitehorse meeting, the Alberta finance minister announced that Alberta was backing away from a go-it-alone solution of saying that they were going to create an Alberta and BC pension plan. They said that they believed the Canada Pension Plan was the best single spot to invest some research about how we can improve the Canada Pension Plan because of he almost repeated the talking points we've been putting up, because there are 17.2 million workers in this country, and all of people who are actually working are contributors to the Canada Pension Plan. The only people who aren't contributing are people who are unemployed. It's the biggest, most diverse, pan-Canadian, portable pension, defined benefit pension plan that exists in the country. Inflation protected, very progressive in many respects that our own workplace plans are not. So we had Alberta, our supposed major enemies, saying this going into the meeting. So that was instructive. Then Colin Hanson, who is the BC finance minister, said effectively the same thing and started calling the BC Federation of Labor and calling us up wanting to meet regularly because he was preparing a paper for his counterparts in Whitehorse that was just publicly released 2 days ago. And maybe I'll get into the politics about why I think that happened. So that was very interesting. So we were getting BC and Alberta, our supposed enemies, calling us up saying, we think the Canada Pension Plan is the way to go. We need to change the Canada Pension Plan to make it more generous. Now, their view, much like the federal Liberals have just recently announced, is that we should turn the Canada Pension Plan, create another wing of it, to be rather like a defined contribution or RSP top-up to the existing system that would give people a little bit more income. And they're turning to the private insurance companies based in Toronto and London, Ontario, to say, why don't you guys start something up because government can't move as quickly as you guys can. And as you can imagine, we saw this as a bit of a victory and a bit of a major problem. Obviously, on the major problem side, the defined contribution model, the fend for yourself, invest for yourself pension model has just simply dollar for dollar not performed to the benefit of defined benefit plans. And we have reports from Mercer. We have reports from employer organizations that show that it's 52% cheaper to operate a defined benefit plan than it is to operate a defined contribution plan. And we shared that information with those finance ministers, and we're continuing to push. So Whitehorse was interesting, and the culmination of it for me was when we were in this wonderful pub adjacent to this place called the High Country Inn, where if you know Whitehorse trade unionists, they refer to something called the Red Square. It's in the corner of this pub, but they've actually painted a red square on the ground with kind of funny references to Moscow or whatever, and it's where labor meets every Friday afternoon. All the major, and it's a major union town, Whitehorse. So we're sitting there in Red Square, and in walks Jim Flaherty, who had been meeting regularly with us, and we sit down to have a 25-minute conversation over beers with Jim Flaherty. Now, Jim Flaherty is probably, he's a member, he's a finance minister, leading decision maker, and one of the most politically right-of-center governments we've seen in this country in a long time. Having said that, weeks before the holiday season, the federal government announced a range of policy changes to federally regulated pension plans. You may or may not have heard about them. One of the things that they implemented was immediate vesting of pension plans, which for some of us trustees, I'm one too, it's a bit of a headache in administrative terms. But as far as social justice is concerned, if you've paid any money into a pension plan, you should be able to receive it, that principle. That was very progressive. And they actually did a couple of other changes. And I think it's because they know, as well as we know, that people who vote for the Conservative Party, by and large, are people who are older Canadians. And particularly, there's a big overlap, and we can be honest in this room, between union members in some towns with historic conservative representation and union voters. So he basically, in that beer conversation, was saying, haven't we done enough? What more do we need to do? We're getting in trouble from our own people by talking about some of these things. But then we put our Canada Pension Plan squarely on the table. And, of course, it's against the finance minister's religion to think about saving cooperatively, It would be rather like us being told to start up a hedge fund, That's not how he thinks. However, when we went through the dollar-for-dollar arguments and we reproduced the research that showed how much cheaper it is to run a defined benefit plan and how the Canada Pension Plan has been limited on purpose for political reasons by decades of lobbyists in this town telling governments that if you dare to have the encroachment of a mandatory plan like the CPP or public pensions, if you dare to do that, that's pension fund socialism. What we need is more entrepreneurial instincts, and we need people to fend for themselves, to save for themselves, because the people who live well in retirement because they've saved prudently. We should not have an incentive in the system to be lazy, which is what the OAS and the Canada Pension Plan, according to that school of thought, is. So that line of thinking has dominated this town for a long time, but we're producing the information to this very conservative, very right-of-center finance minister, and he's actually acknowledging the value of the Canada Pension Plan, but simply stating that he needs to see more evidence from other provinces that this is where they want to go. So I took from that conversation over beers that the ball's actually not in their court. The ball's actually in our court. Very much so. It's up to us to push in the provinces where we have friends in government and to push in the provinces where we may not think we have friends, but I'm going to tell you in this conversation, we have a major opportunity between now and May to not only write letters and to make phone calls, but to pursue vigorously meetings with members of provincial parliament and members of federal parliament with constituents to impress upon them that we're looking to them to do something. Now, Ottawa has been put on an inadvertent hiatus for the next 2 months. And I agree with what my president, Ken Giorgetti, said when we heard about this. I mean, obviously, it's an issue of the prime minister playing some political games, but it's also an opportunity. It's also an opportunity. Because we've been given a two-month window where we can really press people. And all it takes is everybody around this table going back home, and if you haven't already done it, if you have done it, do it again. But if you haven't already done it, set up a meeting with your federal member of parliament and your provincial legislature representative, and make sure they know that there will be consequences in this environment if politicians don't make pensions a priority. They can't run and hide from this issue. Now, I'll end with just talking about some obstacles in doing that. I would say there are three major obstacles. The first is what I would like to call political gamesmanship. And I'm frustrated because sometimes I even run into this in my own party, in the NDP, where the solution to advance the interests of working people on pensions is to be the party that proposes the coolest, sexiest solution in the media and to take credit for it. And we have a major problem here in the province of Ontario, where the party has decided that it's going to propose a go-it-alone, Ontario-based solution to a pan-Canadian problem. Now, I imply no ill motives here, but it's a very long problem in politics where even our party says, we need to make sure that the Liberals and the Tories can't take credit for our ideas. So we're going to go out front. We're going to lead by pushing the Premier of this province in Ontario to introduce an Ontario-specific answer to this pan-Canadian problem. It is a policy issue for us because workers don't stay in the same province their whole life, because Ontario and Quebec, God love them as provinces, have a long record of entering into national discussions and saying, you know, either issuing vetoes or saying, no, we're going to go it alone. And it's actually taken progressives in both of those provinces to lead the solution to actually bring them to a pan-Canadian end. And that's where we got the Canada Pension Plan. That's where we got Medicare. And that's where I think we're going to win the CPP debate. But we have to get into friendly but frank conversations with our friends here in the NDP in Ontario. Because what does it mean in an environment where the NDP in Ontario believes there's a go-it-alone Ontario solution, and Alberta and BC, led by right-wing governments, have said otherwise? What does that tell us when Hassan Youssef and I can go to Whitehorse and have a 20-25 minute conversation with the federal finance minister, but we could not schedule a meeting with the finance ministers of Alberta and BC during that entire time? They would not meet with us, even though they met with us before, but in that environment when all their colleagues were there, they wouldn't meet with us. What does that mean? It means we have to continue to press and continue to push. Secondly, I'll say, frankly, I could do a whole session on this, but we're getting some very bad advice from the pension industry in this moment. Be prepared, and I know some of you have already been contacted for large pension organizations you work for, that the tires of our CPP plan are going to be kicked furiously for very technical reasons, because we're getting an audience with very important people. So, for instance, Malcolm Hamilton, who's a very influential and very smart and very knowledgeable actuary for Mercer, has recently said that we're dramatically overstating the costs of our pension plan, that what we would do is going to break the back of small business and so on and so forth. And we have meetings lined up with Mr. Hamilton and other organizations in the next month where we're going to calmly but firmly explain the fact that the discount rate assumptions that he is using for our plan are purposefully low for one reason. If you can lowball the discount rate assumptions, the investment rate assumptions for your plan, you drive up the liability and the financial cost, which is why Bill Robson, his buddy from the C.D. Howe Institute, recently released a report saying there's a $58 billion shortfall for federal service pension plans. Complete and utter nonsense. Because they assumed a very low discount rate assumption in that report, they were able to balloon up the liabilities. And because they have the acronyms after their name on their business cards, as sainted actuaries, they can get away with that horse shit, but they won't be able to get away with it in this campaign. We're going to press them on that. Why? Because working with us is Bernard Dussault, who was the chief actuary of the Canada Pension Plan from 1992 to 1998, and he has the best BS detector of any actuary I've ever worked with, and he has very little patience for people who are grinding political axes. Bill Robson, Catherine Swift from the Canadian Federation of Independent Business, these were people who spent not short tenure, working in senior federal service positions. Bill Robson at NRCan. Catherine Swift, working under the Mulroney government, senior levels of public service. They know the value of doing those jobs and how those pensions have been bargained for collectively, and yet they're going to collect them on the one hand when they retire, but they're going to piss on them publicly in these idiotic, factionalist, bogus reports. Let's not listen to bad advice. And then lastly, going forward from May, my own priority working for the Congress and what Ken Giorgetti has told me to focus on coming out of this campaign is not so much the public speaking and the organizing that I think we've been very successful in doing. It's education. And that takes us back right here to this room, because my union, this union, has led the way in educating pension activists who are just beginning, to advisory committee members, to once you get to the trustee level. They've led the way in saying, don't put your union cap outside the boardroom door when you get into pension discussions. Don't do that. There's no logical, legal, moral reason to do that. There's a way to be a trade unionist at the pension trustee table. But you guys are in the lead on this. A lot of other affiliates are just grappling with their capacity on this. So the CLC will be piloting a pension course in 2010 to try to build on some of the great work you've done in this union. Because that is, frankly, our big challenge after May. We need to build up our education, develop confidence among our people to take these folks on. Because from what I've seen, we definitely can do it. Thanks for having me.